Blog Talk Radio.
Monday. You can throw that out there. It's still 2012. We're not done.
We definitely are done. Some people have been fired. We could talk about the whole NFL. Say like seven or eight coaches have got the axe today. You want to talk about the bad draft the Lions have? We can throw that out there too. It's all on the table. Whether you want to talk March Madness, whether you want to talk college football, you want to talk about LeBron James winning his first title, the L.A. Kings winning the NHL Cup, and they're going to be holding on to it for quite a while from what I understand. I mean, it's all on the table. But, again, it's your boy, Smitty. Follow me on Twitter, SmittyDMR. Everybody gets the latest and greatest from me. And, you know, I got my special piece out there. I'm going to shout y'all out later on, especially those who listen. You can chime in. Just send me a tweet. Just let me know you're listening. I'd appreciate it because, to be honest with you, the information that I get from all of you all, whether you're a blogger or a news writer or just a Joe Schmo who wants to be on Twitter to express your knowledge of sports, fatherhood, motherhood, whatever, to be honest with you, with the way that the world is turning today, you know, Twitter gets you hype a little bit, and it keeps me going. I have my days where I'm not on it. I want to spend my life with my family. But you know what? I always come back to you. You always want to holler at me because you want my input on sports, moves that have been made, whether Joe is making good draft picks, et cetera, et cetera. We appreciate you here in Detroit Man's Room. And you know what? I got to give a shout-out to all my peeps. KLDMR, TrickyDMR, follow them on Twitter. Give them a shout-out every now and then. They're not up to date as currently as I have been. Because you know what? We working-class Americans. We grind. We blue-collar. This is what we do in Detroit. But I'm going to hold it down in Detroit Man's Room until the door gets the knocking. So, you know, I'm going to kick it off, you know, like we usually do. I know it's been a while, and I'm going to make sure that everybody learns and understands how we do it in Detroit Man's Room. I mean, we got the Hump Day Hype every single Wednesday, and we're going to try to pick that up a little bit. I got a special guest that's supposed to be coming in, Miss Danny. She's going to be a special guest on the show come this Wednesday. She is going to be the Hump Day Hottie. Shout out to her. We're going to give her a little bit of promo. You'll be hearing about it soon. And we're going to get some more Detroit ladies involved in it. Because, you know, you've seen Beyonce on the website. You've seen the likes of Halle Berry, Janet Jackson. Stacey Dash has even graced the cover of Detroit Man's Room, you know. And we've had some locals. And I mean, I don't like to call them locals as if they're not nationally known, but they homegrown. You know, Caitlin Welton, and I guess the other one I can't mention right now because she's currently in a professional job atmosphere. But, you know, more Hump Day Hotties are coming to Detroit Man's Room, and I just want to be up front. The ladies are going to be hot, so prepare for that. But like I said before, I have to bring in the show, as we always have, the normal show, and that is the Man Law. And today's Man Law, we're going to start the year off right and make it, well, I should say we're going to end the year off correctly, but it's also going to be the first podcast that you will hear January 1st and on further. Man Law is going to be Man Law number one. Man Law number one reads, men will invite other men to Man Law. Period. It's just that simple. Everybody's got to invite all men to Man Law. If you don't understand, ask the crowd how they feel about it. That's just how it is. Let me be straight up, because, you know, a lot of people just don't understand the importance of man law. I think as a species, men are taking the back seat to the more beautiful species, which is women. And I understand it. Rightfully so. We should take the back seat. But we should be opening the door for the women. Just because they're, like I say, the more eye candy-ish of the species of the two. But let's just be frank. We still here, too. A lot of us are dead and locked up, you know, playing the gangster role, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we still here. We still cutting grass. We still painting houses. You know, don't forget about us. Just the way it is. You know, still sitting on the couch drinking beer. We play video games. But you know what? We still have a place in this society. For real, how y'all feel about that? So, yeah, like I said, women, y'all come first, but we not, you know, let's just be straight up. We got to stand up and pound our chest, fellas. That's just the way it is. And here in Detroit, you know, being a blue-collar guy myself, we know what it takes to make the world go round. We grind. We hustle. That's just the way it is. So, you know, let's just do it like this. I'm going to kick it real quick. I'm going to give all of y'all a brief intermission from one of my favorite intros. And we're going to kick the show off in a minute.
You're listening to Detroit Man's Room Radio. You can listen to the show from your computer or just call and hear us from your phone. Just dial 323-843-6020. And if you would like to get in on the discussion, press 1. You can also stream live or podcast shows right to your Android, BlackBerry, or iPhone through www.blogtalkradio.com. Just search DMR. Be sure to check out our official website at www.detroitmansroom.com.
Yeah. We appreciate that, man. Really appreciate you setting us up with that drop. But here we go. Let's start it off. I'm going to give some brief analysis because I do feel like we're going to wind up getting some calls later on. But I'm going to start off with Calvin Johnson, the year he had in 2012. Just phenomenal. So, what else can I say? He graced the cover of Madden. He covered ESPN magazine. He and Matthew Stafford were both on the cover of Sports Illustrated in the regional issue. Signed a big-time contract. Broke Jerry Rice's record of yards in one season. To me, him as a person is more than what we think of most athletes should be. You know, we as working class citizens, we tend to think that money is going to wind up making you a different person, and it does for quite a few people. But Calvin, to me, is like a blueprint of what hard work winds up being. Because there are probably a lot of people in the world, not a whole lot, that maybe as tall as Calvin, you know, maybe even the same weight, but they probably don't work as hard as he does in order to achieve the things that he achieves. You know, he came out this year and said that he wanted to average 100 catches a game, 100 yards a game, and he winded up doing that. So for him to accomplish some of the things that he's put together, I want to give kudos to him. Now, I'm going to run off of some of these real quick because I'm just throwing them out there. For anybody who's listening, 323-843-6020, that's the number. Another guy, actually two, I'm going to tie them in together, from your Detroit Tigers. It was a signing that came through my telephone, well, smartphone I should call it. The Detroit Tigers has signed Prince Fielder. And when this came through my phone, I had to open it up, and, you know, it was almost like suspension of disbelief. I couldn't believe it. Made a few phone calls, you know, and I was like, okay, we're doing this show, and we're going to talk about the Detroit Tigers signing Prince Fielder. Sent shockwaves through all of baseball. It was crazy. And the crazy thing was that, you know, Victor Martinez had went down, and we needed somebody, another big bat that was going to replace Victor, put him alongside Miguel Cabrera. And, you know, Fielder did his thing. He didn't have an outstanding season by any means, but I believe that Fielder had a good enough year to do what needed to be done for the Tigers to get to where they got to. Yeah, the Tigers did get swept in the World Series, but they got there. Wasn't satisfactory. You know, if you check out the hashtag, my personal input was World Series a bust. And, you know, they busted it up. So, I mean, what can I say? But the expectations are still there. You may not like the manager and Jim Leland, but they still got another opportunity to come back and do it again. So the next guy, I mean, these are some of the best athletes, and I'm talking about just Detroit sports. Miguel Cabrera, the MVP of Major League Baseball and also the Triple Crown winner, just lit it on fire. I mean, it was like must-see TV all over again after Justin Verlander had just been the MVP last year. You know, these are a few guys that you can't talk Detroit sports about and forget about. Those three guys, to me, the most important of 2012. Although Prince didn't have an elite season, to me, signing him and putting him on this roster, the situation that it put the Tigers in was most important. Am I satisfied with the Tigers? Not at all. Still got a lot of work to do. You know, still got some work to do in that bullpen. But it showed what Mike Ilitch really wanted to do with this squad. So moving forward, I mean, hell, they still got other moves that need to be made. And that's just my three. I'm sure that there's more out there. I even put together a magazine cover with a lot of the parts that went down for the 2012 season. And that includes the Olympics. I'm talking about Usain Bolt, Michael Phelps, Ryan Lochte. And don't forget about the NBA season that went down. LeBron James won his title, got another MVP. and to me had a phenomenal playoffs. We saw the Thunder go crazy. You know, these are just some things that went down in 2012 that, you know, crazy. So you want to chime in again, the number 323-843-6020 is the number. Like a familiar face checking into the DMR. What up, though?
What's going on?
What's happening, Rico?
What's up, what's up? What's going on, man?
How you feel, man?
I'm good, man. I'm just trying to sit here and reflect on all the good and bad of the 2012 year sports-wise, man. It's, you know, Detroit, you overall was a roller coaster. You know, you look at to kind of start the year off, Lions in the playoffs. I think that was the peak. You know, that was the peak to start off 2012. Our team, who had been searching and trying to get in the playoffs, coming in the playoffs at 10-6 against a hot New Orleans team. You know, then you look at the lows. Obviously, the way the Tigers got swept in the World Series, the way the Lions fell from grace, if you want to say, from the beginning of the year. And, you know, you look at the other sports, the Pistons, you know, you know, NBA season is still pretty young, 2 months in, 3 months in. But I don't think anybody expected them to do anything playoff-wise. So, you know, it's been a roller coaster. You know, watching Miguel Cabrera tear it up all year, the Prince Fielder signing, you know, Calvin Johnson and his breaking of Jerry Rice's record. We've been lucky as a city to watch to have so many great players, you know, in one city. You know, with Cabrera, with Fielder, with Stafford and Johnson, we've been lucky. A lot of teams, a lot of cities can't say that. You know, a lot of cities have one good team. You know, we have a few good teams, and possibly could all of our teams could possibly be doing better if they handle business like they're supposed to in the offseason.
I like your points about because it spreads around. You know, and to me, some teams or some cities aren't as fortunate as we are to, you know, we can go at it year-round about our sports teams. Like, the Lions are done, but you know what? The Pistons are still in, I guess, you know, in the middle of their season. It still gives us something to talk about. You know, we still got, of course, the Michigan State Spartans won their bowl game yesterday. It's not a big deal, but, you know, a lot of people from around this area went to Michigan State, so it's still a buzz there. You know, you got Michigan State basketball. You got Michigan basketball. So, you know, one thing stops and just continues to pick up. So I think we're kind of spoiled, to be honest with you. You know, if you go somewhere like a Kansas City where you got the Chiefs, the Royals, and I don't even – do they even have a hockey team?
No.
I'm not even sure. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's just an example. Don't get me wrong. You go to New York, Chicago, you know, places like Dallas. Even L.A. doesn't even have a football team, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I think we can get kind of spoiled in thinking that we so loyal to the teams that we have. And, you know, I think we're just fortunate. And I think, to be honest with you, Rico, our college teams, primarily talking about Michigan, but Michigan State has held their own, especially with Izzo being where he is as far as a coach. I think that our colleges, Michigan and Michigan State alone, lift us up as far as a superior sports, I should say. I don't want to say city because, you know, with Michigan and Michigan State aren't Detroit sports. They're more or less the state. But I think you know where I'm getting at. I think Michigan and Michigan State really hold us up. How do you feel about that?
I feel and you know what? It's the truth. I mean, those, you know, the especially with the resurgence of Michigan the last 3 years, being able to get to the tournament consistently and now being ranked as the number two team in the nation, and State's always going to be around. You know, regardless of where their seeding is, you always have to worry about them during tournament time. Izzo normally puts together pretty good teams and tough schedules so he can prepare his team for tournament and so they can have deep runs. So, you know, with Michigan State, Michigan, and even Detroit, you know, Mercy, you know, they've been able to come around the last few years and have a little buzz. We've been lucky as a state to have so much talent in it. You know, a lot of good players normally go out, you know, from Michigan to Michigan State and have pretty good careers in, you know, whatever their field is. You know, so we've been lucky. You know, the Red Wings NHL season is locked out, but I'm pretty sure they would probably be around. That's not in the tops in the West right now. So, you know, that's been a story franchise for the past 30 years. You know, so we've been accustomed to winning and seeing championships go up with them and with Michigan State, you know, and we the Lions have just started to come on the last 3 years, 2.5 years, you know, the playoff buzz last year. We've been spoiled. You know, the Pistons had a great run, you know, for almost a decade with that team. So we've been spoiled. We've been able to, each and every year, at least one or two of our teams have been in the postseason and making a lot of noise. We have been at the last game of the year.
Yeah. You hitting it on the head with that because, you know, the Red Wings have actually held the city up for a longer period of time than they probably should have. And, you know, the Pistons kind of took a little bit of that pressure off of them during their run. And I guess now the change of the guard is shifting to the Tigers. If they can continue, you know, their little run that they're on right now, because, you know, they're putting people in position to make them a real superior team. And it's just the pockets of Mike Ilitch. You know, if you got deep pockets, you can make it happen. And I think it's just obvious because the fact that hockey is not currently active. Ilitch knows the situation with that, so he wants to give one of his babies a ring. And it's just, you know, he built the million-dollar stadium, and I think the Tigers, to me, you know, I think we're coming back as a real baseball city. I'm not saying that we are, because the Lions are probably a superior team in the city. But, you know, going down to the ballpark is like a very old-fashioned thing that really came back. And I'm pointing at the Tigers primarily because that's where the money is being shoveled, you know. You haven't seen too much go into the Detroit Pistons or the Detroit Lions. You know, of course, we had the big money situation with Sue and Stafford, but that's just draft picks. But he wants this ring. You know, regardless of how he has to get it, talk about that real quick, Rico.
You know what? I sit back and I remember when in 06 when the Tigers, you know, obviously made that turnaround and they made the run and got into the World Series. You know, it was just a different run. The city was, downtown was vibrant. You know, it was something I had never seen before. You know, I was shocked by it, and I think that awe that just lifted the city. The city kind of just rallied around that 0-16. You know, and I think that I think Ilitch felt that. I think he's seen that, and I think that he's saying, you know what? You know, I've been investing so much money into the Red Wings, and they've had success, but the baseball was a little bit different. It was a little bit, you know, You know, I guess because it's, you know, hockey's in the wintertime, and you know you're not outside, you're in a building, and you can get more fans to a ballpark than you can a hockey arena. You know, it's summertime, everybody wants to be out, and there's so many different things going around downtown. It was vibrant, you know, to go downtown. Yeah. It was busy. And him investing the money and getting the players that he did and re-signing Verlander and going out and getting Prince Fielder, and putting those pieces around and, you know, making trades and getting, you know, Max Scherzer and doing the things that he had to do to always be competitive and keep the Tigers competitive and competing for a division title and possibly in the World Series every year was amazing. I was the first one shocked when I seen the Prince Fielder shot. When he was a free agent and leaving the Brewers, I thought he was never coming here because of his father's situation, him always having to answer questions about being in his father's shadow. You know, I felt that he would never think to come here. But when he came here, I guess it was such a long, you know, the creative period for him, he sat so long, and the Angels were able to go out and make an offer and get him. You know, Tim, I said, that instantly makes us, if not the best team in baseball, at least one of the best two because of Miguel Cabrera and him. That batting lineup last year was amazing. And I could just only had imagined if Martinez was healthy to have all three of them in there. You know, they made it back to the World Series again. I didn't think a lot of myself. I didn't see them going because of the season that they had. I didn't see them running and having a deep playoff run. But they did. They made it. And Ilitch has focused so much on baseball. I think that it's coming up year 2013, it's going to be within the next year or two. I think they can win it all. I think they have to get their pitching and their bullpen in place. I think they have to get their defense together. If they can get those three things together in the next year or two, I can definitely see a World Series being celebrated by our team before it changed downtown.
Right. I don't want to look too far into the future, but I think they do got a shot. You know, when you start shoveling money in the right places, you'll put yourself in a position to make it happen. And, you know, you and I have had back and forth about the way that the team has been built. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, we're not far off as far as the agreement that this team doesn't have a good farm system. No. But we're not very far from those bad years where, you know, your best player was Pudge Rodriguez, and he can only carry so much. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, to me, you either put the money in place or you tear it down and you build it the right way. And I think that the fact that hockey fell off, it gave Ilitch the initiative to say, okay, let me switch gears. Let me jump over here. Cabrera was already here. Victor Martinez had got his contract. Let me go get Prince. And now, you know, you have Doug Fister, Max Scherzer. You go out and you get Torii Hunter. And you sign Sanchez. Now, you know, now you're looking like the Yankees. So, to me, I think the pressure is even deeper because you didn't grow your team. You actually went out and bought it. You know what I'm saying?
I think that's always the case when you don't grow your team. When you go out and spend money, people are expecting results immediately. And I think that we as fans, if we would sit back and say, okay, well, this guy's coming through the farm system, but he's not ready, we can give him another year or two, or, you know, you have more patience. You say, well, this kid is still young. But when you have proven players, when you go out and spend big money on proven players, you want to see the results. And even though Prince Fielder didn't have a good year, you know, he had a good year still. I think people were thinking he was going to come in here and do what he did in Milwaukee. And, you know, that's unrealistic because of the bat that he has behind him in Cabrera. And, you know, he's not the star on the team anymore, so he has to kind of take a role player kind of, you know, do what's best for the team kind of thing. Just get on base, pretty much. you know, because of the guy behind them. But, you know, the pressure is going to be there because they made it to the World Series. So the pressure is back on the players, and Miguel Cabrera to come out, to do with Verlander to come out, Max Scherzer to come out. This is a contract year for him. You know, Sanchez has got paid a lot of money. You know, $80 million is a lot of money. And you got to produce. I don't think anyone's going to settle for him being 500 or around 500. People are going to start wanting to see 16, 17, 18 win seasons from him.
Right. Yeah, I think it's just simple. You know, it's almost like I think the Tigers in two seasons have put themselves in position to say that it's almost equal to where the Pistons were in the middle of their run. We didn't really care about the regular season. We were just concerned about getting to the playoffs and being healthy and being able to make a run, because that's where you make your money at, is in the playoffs. And, you know, guys like Verlander and the rest of the pitching staff, regardless of whether or not it's starters or bullpen, they got to pull it together in order to have a good year this next season. So, you know, I guess looking forward, it's going to be promising. But, you know, I'm not going to say that 2012 was satisfactory for the Tigers, because I wanted it all, and I mean, I'm continue to do that, because I want championships built. I don't necessarily like the looking good just to get in the playoff type attitude, and that's just me, and that's why I got a problem with some other teams. So let's switch gears. Now let's go with the Pistons next. I know a lot of people maybe think why we can't go with the Lions, because that's the obvious pick, but I think the Pistons are real interesting because, you know, they had another good draft, I think, maybe one of their better drafts, and a lot of people are not happy with the fact that Andre Drummond is not getting a whole lot of playing time. So let me get your thoughts real quick on that, and then I'll elaborate further.
You know what? I don't have a problem with Andre Drummond not getting the time that people want him to have. I mean, I think that, you know, can he produce? A lot of people saying, well, it's not like, you know, we have a playoff or a championship roster starting five out here, so they should get him out there. I mean, the guy's 18, 19 years old. You know, he was never a player that, you know, was drafted to come out and be an immediate impact. He was someone that was for the future. That was for, you know, he's still a lot, still parts of his game that are still just raw. He doesn't have any post moves. And this is around a basket knife. And there are still questions about his motor. You know, certain parts of the game, I've watched games where he's just been, you don't see him. You don't see him. He's able to get boxed out and blocked out, you know. But that's parts of his game that he'll have to develop over time. You know, he'll have to figure out, how can I get myself involved in this game? And we said the same things with Monroe. Monroe, when he got here, when he was a rookie, he had to get out there, but he was a lot more polished than Drummond was. You know, Monroe had the jump shot. You know, he could do a little dribble drive and take you to the basket or whatever. And he had the ability to pass. Those things are the Drummond don't have. You know, I think the Pistons drafted well. You know, they got some shooters. They needed some shooters behind it. The three-point line, they got that. They got some guys to play some defense. You know, Drummond rebounds the ball well, plays defense well, but he still needs to add to his game. So I'm fine with the minutes that he's getting right now.
Yeah, I think it's coming together, but it's a lot slower than people are really expecting, and I think that's the biggest problem. I think, you know, again, we can go back to being spoiled from the 2003 season all the way, I think it was to, what, 2009 or 2008 or so, they was making runs. I think that, you know, I think people straight up got spoiled. Like, you know, the effect that Mr. Davis's death had on the team, to me, was, you know, it just sent shockwaves through the palace, and people don't understand that. If you're not wanting to put money in the right places, and I'm not saying Bill Davidson put money in a whole lot of places, but because he didn't spend a whole lot. And now it's like we don't even know what Tom Gores is actually doing with that front office. We don't know if Joe going to be here, you know. So he really just has to sit back and make the draft pick that he can. And I think in the past couple of years he's had success. So I like the way that they're bringing Drummond along. It may take longer than people think. And to be honest with you, the way that they're playing is okay. They're not closing out games the way they should. But, you know, I'm not looking for a whole lot except the development of the young players. And I'm talking about Singler, Drummond, Monroe, and Brandon Knight. You know, other than that, everybody else is really expendable, and they're really just helping those guys grow. So, and one thing I will bring up, Rico, I think that when Drummond is on the floor, he has to play with more of the the veteran players. What do you think about that?
Yeah, he does. He does need to be out there with the veteran player. I mean, you know, I'm not opposed to how they're playing him. You know, I think they're bringing him along just fine. I never been a Lawrence Frank fan, so I don't, you know, Lawrence Frank has always been a coach that a great defensive mind, offensively, nothing. And his teams have always struggled to kind of close out games. And if you look at the teams that he had success with when he was in New Jersey, you know, they played great and they had good point guards and Jason Kidd, but they could never get to, you know, to closing games out the way that they should have. They let a lot of teams sneak back in games. They would build big leads and teams would be able to come back. I can remember the year when the Pistons and New Jersey were playing in the Eastern Conference Finals and it went to like two or three overtimes because they couldn't close out the games. But, you know, Drummond is, I believe he has the potential to be a pretty good center, a pretty good big man in the league for a while. The skill set, you know, you see the different pieces there. I think is he better than what Darko was? When we got Darko, yeah. You can see it. You know, you see the spark. And Darko, you've seen, and you may be, but Darko was slimmer. He was used to playing a European style, you know, jump shot, three-point shot. He's more the meat and potatoes guy. He fits Detroit mold. You know, he has all the tools there. It's just him, you know, getting better and better and adding to his game in the offseason.
Yeah, I think that, you know, them being so young, I think they're going to be a little bit like the Atlanta Falcons were a few years ago. And, you know, that's not a bad thing because, you know, I didn't like the way Atlanta was brought along when they wind up hitting the wall and a lot of people expected them to just, like, you know, beat the Boston Celtics or, you know, take over the Miami Heat. Or right. even beat that Piston team was on their run. You know, I think once you get to that type of ceiling, you gotta, you know, readjust things and make things happen. And I think that if Joe is given the opportunity, he can make something happen out of a team that's built that way. I'm not trying to be that loyal to say that I want him to stay when I'm talking about Joe. But, you know, the possibilities are endless when it comes to, you know, when you have good drafts, and if the Lions could take a little bit of that, they'd be a whole lot better off. But I think, you know, if they draft correctly again, wind up saving some money, moving another guy, having some cap space at the right time to get the right free agent, you know, somewhat like when we were able to get Chauncey Billups and pull off a trade, you know, those are the things that can take you from an 8 seed to a 4 seed. And that could be the difference in actually making a run. But at the same time, let's just be honest. We're not about to be running up against, you know, the likes of the Boston Celtics, the Miami Heat, the New York Knicks right now. So, you know, we got time. That's why I'm not really worried about it. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think that's a fair assessment. But At this point in time, the way that the NBA, you know, the teams have shifted and players have shifted into the bigger markets, it would be unrealistic to think that you could put a team together and that they could be able to compete with these teams year in and year out. But as for right now, if they're choosing to go through and build through the draft, 3 or 4 years from now, when those contracts from those teams, those players start to run out, and since the, you know, NBA has changed up the rules with these new contracts of players not just being able to just go to these teams with, you know, that they want to without, you know, getting the max money, it'll be interesting to see 3 or 4 years from now. But as far as them being able to compete right now, I just couldn't see it. Even if we had a team that right now, you know, it was middle of the pack or 6 or 7 seed, you know, I would be happy with that. You know, we don't have that, obviously, right now. We're still a young team and getting in place. I think we have too many players that all fit the same mold. You know, we've talked about it, you know, on Twitter, just these certain guys that kind of play the same way. They have too many players at the same position that play the same way and can do the same thing. I think that really, looking at their roster, I think they're one good small forward or shooting guard away from being that middle-of-the-pack team, a guy who can get to the basket, own his own, create his own shot, and play defense. That's exactly what they're missing right now.
I like that, because I think if you do that, even if you were to keep a guy like Rodney Stuckey, I think his more natural position would probably be playing sixth or seventh man coming off the bench. He'll just be like the Vinnie Johnson-type shooting guard to relieve either your point guard or your shooting guard, the guy that you're talking about, the swing man. I think that, you know, you got some pieces, but you got to be able to put them in the right place. And even, you know, a guy like Jason Maxfield, you know, I don't even know if he would play on a championship caliber team, but, you know, I can't deny some of the stuff he's doing now. But, you know, of course we know that that's Greg Monroe. I mean, that's Andre Drummond's spot. But he's got to be able to mold himself and be able to play better throughout the season. So let's switch gears, man. Let's go ahead and dive into the Lions, because I think the most intriguing thing that you brought up was the fact that they opened up the year against the New Orleans Saints and got bounced in the playoffs pretty bad. Talk about that game alone and how it really just crumbled the season that they had.
You know what? I think that loss, looking back at that, at the game, you know, that loss kind of summed up the year that they were having and summed up a lot of this season. You know, it was, you know, the secondary got beat a lot bad. Players, you know, just immature. The immature ways came out a lot in that game, you know, with Titus Young and, you know, Pettigrew, Sue, you know, it summed up a lot of what would happen this, you know, this NFL season. You know, Calvin played great that game. I think he had like 200 and something yards that game. You know, it gave us a picture of what he would do this upcoming year. You know, it was just, you know, the secondary, like I said, the secondary missed a lot of chances, a lot of picks, a lot of picks was left on the ground, a lot of guys couldn't make the plays. Yeah, it summed up a lot. You know, it summed up a lot this year. I felt that it, after watching that game, if I'm the GM of the Lions and I'm watching that game, my offseason is a lot different than what they did. I would have made moves and gotten players in this organization that they didn't do. You know, watching that, you know, they tried to address the issue with the secondary. You know, they didn't address the linebacker situation. You know, they went to get another wide receiver. They just stood pat. They felt that they had the guys already, and if those guys just didn't step up, you know, the Barry situation, nobody could have predicted that to happen, but it did. The Barry situation happened. And then when you cut that guy, you have nobody to replace him, then you're doing the same thing you were doing last year, just signing guys to, you know, off the street to try to make the roster.
Right.
And it, it was almost comical. Like, you know, who's going to start today in the secondary for the Lions? And they're going to go grab a guy off the street, you know, the next guy walking down the street.
Right.
You know, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, I think a lot of the team was out of gas at that point in time. And, I mean, you know, the injuries happened at a bad time. I remember Chris Houston and Lewis Delmas both got hurt late in the year. And, you know, when you try to look at the secondary, you know, you got to talk about going at least six guys deep. And I'm talking about corners and safeties. And the Lions just did not have it, even with Eric Wright and Chris Houston playing. You know, because to me, they played okay throughout the majority of the year. But when they started getting dinged up, they just didn't have the depth to supplement for, you know, the next man up type of philosophy. And not having a legit safety core is obviously a problem. And it has continued. But, you know, in that game, I saw some things that offensively out of Stafford and Megatron that, you know, they had ice water in their veins. And I think that those two are the key to the Lions. But the problem is that you still are young at the quarterback position. And what he showed in that playoff game, it was like nothing fazed him. And that kind of surprised me, and I was kind of impressed by that alone, because he was in a lot of pressure situations in all of last year and this year. To me, starting this season, even in the preseason, I saw that something wasn't right with him. I don't know if it was an injury or whatnot, but it didn't look the same as that playoff game and even all of last year. So I don't know if it's the offensive line. I don't know if it's the fact that they have a lack of the speed at running back. You know, it was just so much going on looking into the offseason, because Mayhew made no moves. You know, they re-signed a lot of guys that didn't look good on this roster. And, you know, I have my personal thoughts on some of the guys that got re-signed, like Stephen Tulloch with his knee problems. They brought him back. You know, guys like Nate Burleson restructured their contract, and I'm cool with that, but then you go out and you draft another wide receiver. You know, it was just a lot of, to me, I just think it's a lot simpler when you just, you dial things back and you restructure from the bottom up. And what I mean is that you gotta build within the trenches, and you can't supplement for, you know, your obvious holes by putting a whole lot of rookies that were drafted late in a position where they're really just not ready. You know, it's cool to find a diamond in the rough, but you can't try to get four of them in one draft. It just doesn't make sense.
Right.
I would rather come out of the draft with two, you know, all-pro players as opposed to trying to, you know, really fill up a 53-man roster with guys that have, quote, potential. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I think that was unrealistic thinking by him. I mean, I think, you know, like you said, you know, you may get one guy or two guys that are going to come out and be all-pro. Hopefully they're your first two-round picks. But you may always have that surprise, that late round pick that blossom or something like that. But like you say, he put those guys out there in the situations, those rookies out there in situations where they couldn't get to the potential that people were putting out there, you know, on them, because they were fifth, sixth, seventh round picks, or, you know, they couldn't live up to those expectations.
Right.
They would never have been able to. Maybe a few years down the road they will. But, you know, you throw a guy who's been in college for two or three years and he's been used to one way, and then you put him out there and say, hey, we need you to do this, we need you to do that. He's like, hey, I've been used to doing this, you know, doing that. It's unrealistic to think he's going to come out there and have a Pro Bowl year. And it's not going to happen. You know, and if he does, you know, it's a one in a million shot, you know. But they have a long way to go. I think that they have to start looking at creators, they have to start thinking about trades. You know, they have to start thinking about making better moves in the offseason than they have the last 2 years, because those lack of moves and lack of pursuing the right players have maybe cost these guys another year or two. You look at, like I say, even if they have a good offseason this year and go sign the guys they need to go get and go draft the guys they need to go get, they probably could still make the playoffs next year, but I couldn't see them having a deep run. You know,
yeah.
I sit back and I look at other quarterbacks in the league, and you look at the Matt Ryan, you know, you look at Tony Romo, you know, you look at all these guys around the league who take their job serious and in the offseason, and Peyton Manning, and these guys live, breathe football. Now, I don't know if Stafford does that. I mean, the mechanical issues that he's had for the past 2 years, he shouldn't have. If he wants to consider himself an elite quarterback, he has to correct those things. Can he make the sidearm throw? Can he do all of that? Yes, those are all perks and bonuses. You know, when a play breaks down, for him to do a sidearm throw and it be accurate, that's a plus. That's something that you say, hey, you know, I can add this to my game. But when you have the time and the ability to make the throw, you got to make the throw. He threw a lot of interceptions this year because feet wasn't set, you know, shoulders wasn't squared. Just had a commentator. I heard a lot of the time the commentator saying, like, where was the ball going? The receiver's over here.
Right.
It's amazing. You watch Eli. You watch, you know, guys like Matt Ryan. When they played the lineup a couple of Saturdays ago, Matt Ryan put the ball in places that, you know, he could only get them there. You know, the Julio Jones throwing it back in the end zone, that was a phenomenal play. I wonder, could Stafford do something like that?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I got to agree with a lot of what you're saying. And I think, to be honest with you, Rico, a lot of it starts with his feet. And I think that's more where you play quarterback. The sidearm situation, I don't care for it because he gets a lot of balls batted down. That's what I don't like. You know, a lot of the little sidearm throws, they wind up cute, and even the 45-degree angle, that type of stuff is just not – you can't do that. You can't get away with that on a regular basis. So I like what you said about Peyton Manning and Eli because, you know, they have quarterback camps. And even pros go to these camps. So, you know, I think if he gets in, because he's worked out before. He and Calvin went down to Georgia, I think, a couple years ago and worked out. I think he needs to go down there with somebody else, like if he's going to wind up staying. Or, you know, it's unfortunate what happened with Broyles,
right,
that he can't get a guy like that to go down and work out with him because I view his growth with another receiver. It could even be a tight end for all I care. It could be Chris Drummond for all I care.
Yeah.
But with Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, the chemistry that they had, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't even think Marvin Harrison would have been a great wide receiver without Peyton Manning and the work that they put in together, if that's fair. Because I think that, you know, even Nate Burleson isn't great, but he works hard enough with the guys that he plays with in order to make the plays that need to be made. You know, and that's just, to me, I think that's something that has to come within Stafford. Because if you think about it, Rico, last year they had we had the situation with the NFL lockout, and the team got together and they worked out. And, you know, Stafford was part of that staff that said, okay, look, let's do this. You know, Vandenbosch was the guy that really put the camps together, that the teams would work out outside of Ford Field or Allen Park. Stafford was a part of that. And so was Nate Burleson. They worked out a lot together. They brought Titus Young along. And I don't even know if Stafford had that type of off season. So I'm feeling exactly what you're saying. His mechanics needs work, and I think that they need to really stop ignoring that, and he needs to do the same thing. Hold yourself accountable.
Right, and I think that it all starts with the leadership of him on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, he has that captain logo on his on his jersey for a reason. I think he also, another thing I'd like to see from him is to start showing more leadership, start holding guys more accountable, just start voicing it. You know, he doesn't have to voice it to the media, but he's got to start voicing it to those players. You know, the higher incident, to me, if I'm a quarterback and Tyus Young is my receiver, that incident of him, you know, going all out, couldn't happen. I've never seen a player in if you look at on Peyton's team or Eli's team or down in Atlanta with Matt Ryan, you don't see receivers acting out and I'm not getting the ball enough and all of this other stuff. It's not about that. It's about winning. And if you don't want to be on this train that's winning, then you got to go.
Yeah.
You know, if he has to command that on the offensive side of the ball, that's his team out there. Because at the end of the day, the microphone is going to be in his face, and they're going to be asking him, well, what happened on this? What's going on? Or what's that? They're not going to Calvin. They're not going to none of the offensive linemen. They're not going to Ed Brew. They're going to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, I like what you're saying, and I can't disagree with it one bit. I just think that, you know, Stafford is probably really in his I like to say somewhere between his sophomore and his senior year, because he has been here 4 years, but he's only played X amount of games, you know, like somewhere around 40 games so far. So,
right.
You know, he's still got a lot of growing to do, and I think, you know, the magnifying glass is on this team in so many ways. I think the guy that we can move outside of the equation of that is Calvin Johnson. And, you know, maybe even with the season that Sue had, okay, let's leave him alone too, as long as he can get his driving record correct. You know, it's only a few guys that we can say, okay, let's not worry about them. And I think that's the problem. So if Stafford has got to have a good off season, to me it starts with him. You know, Schwartz is so-called firing a few positional coaches. To me, his issue is character with the team and his clock management. And, you know, the coordinators still have to maintain or do better, period. And Mayhew, like you said, he's got to have a damn good draft. And like you said, Rico, I'll be honest with you. I still think that if everything goes right with this offseason, 8-8 is still probably what they're going to wind up being next year.
Right. Yeah, and I can see that. I can see 8-8. I mean, if they have a few games where it's close and they come back and win it, maybe 10-6, but 8-8 season is very realistic if they come out and do everything they need to do this offseason.
Yeah. I think that's fair because I'm going to be honest with you, as bad as that sounds, that almost looks like a recipe for disaster for the whole coaching staff and maybe even Mayhew anyway. So looking forward, I don't think it looks very good at all.
No.
So I know a lot of Lions fans probably maybe listen to this. They're going to say, well, that sounds crazy. Well, to be honest with you, I think they overachieved last year and they underachieved this year. And now with all the free agents, they got to re-sign, you know, and you got to have a good draft. And I don't even know if they're going to be able to go out and get anybody because they got so many money tied up in the top three players in Stafford, Johnson, and Sue. So, you know, it's almost like a wait-and-see thing. You know, I've noticed it in the middle of the year when they started looking like, you know, it wasn't going to be a good season. But, hey, that's the way 2012 was. It started bad with the Saints loss down in New Orleans. And, you know, hopefully they can turn things around. But I'm not expecting a whole lot in 2013 from the Lions.
No, me either. I can't see them going out and winning 10 or 11 games. I mean, anything can happen. Injuries happen. And, you know, it may happen to another team where they're able to win some games and sneak in or catch a few teams early on. The schedule obviously hasn't been released yet for 2013, but I'm pretty sure in a few weeks it will be, and we'll all get to, you know, break that down and, you know, get our early season picks in and what we think they'll be. It's disappointing to see that, you know, I think we all came in at the beginning of the year, thinking that, you know, win, lose, or draw that playoff game, that we had a pretty good team. And had we been able to build on it in the draft and in free agency. And it wasn't the case. They decided to stand pat and add a few players here and stick them out there, and we've all seen what happened at the end of the year. But, you know, to take that step back, the big step back, and then try to go put all that together, you know, it's going to be rough for Mayhew and Schwartz. A lot of people are going to be calling for those guys' heads next year because they won't make the playoffs. And it's deservingly so, because you can't in the NFL, you can never take a year off. You know, if you start to become comfortable when you feel, and that's for players, for GM, you can never get too comfortable in the league, because you can never guarantee anything. You can be like Eli last year, holding up the Super Bowl ring, and this year not watching it on TV.
Right,
you can never see that.
Right, and that's crazy, Rico, because I was going to go into one of these championship teams and look at it. We looking at the New York Giants is not going to the playoffs at all. They couldn't even get – what did they get, 8 wins? I mean, that's just crazy. And don't get me wrong, you know, it's the window of opportunity in the NFL is not that big. So they were the last team to get into the playoffs, as is the Redskins this year. And look at where they sit now. It's just like – it'll tell you where you are as a team. If you can get in, that's one thing. But, you know, do you have the ability to go deep into the NFL playoffs? And a team like the New York Giants, if they would have got in, I would still say that they have a shot. So, you know, it's all about the way that your organization builds your team. And to be honest with you, what you just said about the Lions is it's all in a nutshell. They're not going to be able to put it together this season, and Schwartz is going to wind up being fired. I'm almost looking at it like, why is it the team, you know, restructuring that anyway? So, like I said, let's just go into last year's playoffs, because it is part of 2012. The New York Giants beating the New England Patriots again. And I picked the Patriots because that is my adopted team. I'm not even going to lie. I figured that the Giants had just as good a shot as beating the Patriots as they did in, what was it, 2009? I think it was. But, you know, I just thought that I was so undecided, Rico, going into that game, that I didn't even pick until the kickoff, because I figured that the Giants had just as much energy as they did before. And rolling over Green Bay and beating the San Francisco 49ers had me figuring that, you know, the team is probably destined again. And Eli came through once again and is still the guy that Tom Brady cannot beat. Talk about that Super Bowl.
That Super Bowl, you know what, when I watched the 2009, when the Patriots had that amazing year where they went 16-0, and I'm sitting up there like, they cannot, you know, they're not going to lose this game against the Giants, who barely snuck in the playoffs. And, you know, the Giants went up there and battled them 3 quarters, and, you know, we seen the end of New York. So, you know, then again, last year, I just looked at it. I just remember just that playoff run of them, even in the regular season, them just rolling over teams until the playoffs and was able to get there. And I felt that the Giants had it. I felt that they could win it. Eli was on another level. His chemistry with his receivers was amazing. The running game was clicking. The defense was hot. I couldn't see him not losing it, you know. New England defense was horrible last year. They were in the bottom of the league in, you know, passing, receiving yards, giving up. The running game was okay. You know, New England, you know, but they still had Tom Brady. You know, I think as long as you got Tom Brady on your team, you always give them a pretty good shot to win the game.
Right.
They just it just didn't happen for them. They lost it on the on an amazing throw and catch by Manningham, and was able to wrap it up. And it was, you know, it was meant for them to do it. And it was, I was, you know, Eli was able to shake a lot of the haters off him. People saying he wasn't an elite quarterback, and able to get that second ring to definitely bring him to elite status. So, I was more or less shocked by them this year not making it, you know, but they started to fill up a lot of games. You know, they didn't, I guess they were still on that we were best team coming into the game thing. They felt that teams were just going to lay down because they were the champs. And they kind of, certain players on the team probably had a big head, probably didn't do as much as they should have done. The defense didn't look like itself.
Mm-hmm.
We did lose a few players. So, you know, I guess they'll definitely retool, and I'm pretty sure they're gonna be calling and scratching to get back into the playoffs next year too.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are probably glad the Giants didn't make the playoffs this year. I will say that. But you know, the funny thing is that now Peyton Manning is back in the playoffs, and it's funny that they got the one seed. So, you know, I think that the Giants are just one of those teams that they're a good football team collectively. They may not even be the greatest from top to bottom organizationally wise, because, you know, Jerry Reese, you know, puts a lot of players in place at the right time, it seems like. It's not like it's consistently good, but, you know, he'll have a draft or an off season where things just came together throughout the stretch of the season. Sometimes they have bad closing seasons, or they may start slow. But, you know, they just wind up in the right place at the right time. I'm going to be honest with you. They may be back next year. But last year, they just seemed to be at the right place at the right time. They got in late. And once again, the crazy NFC East. And then, you know, they winded up beating the Atlanta Falcons, which was like a teeter-totter matchup, because having to host a playoff game at 8-8 is crazy, A. And then you wind up beating up on the Atlanta Falcons, who I think they got shut out. Correct me if I'm wrong.
It was like if they put up, I think Atlanta got a safety, so they got like 2 points. That was it.
It was a 2-point, yep. It was like 30-something to 2. And then you go to Green Bay, you wind up popping them, which, you know, Aaron Rodgers went 15-1, had an MVP season, and couldn't get it together because, you know, of course he missed 2 weeks while Matt Flynn was taking care of the Lions, and then having the bye week. They probably couldn't pull the thing together, and then the Giants wind up popping them, and then they went out to San Francisco, and San Francisco couldn't play well on special teams. So it was a recipe for success. And then all you got to do is play one good game, which I always say that it's harder to get to the Super Bowl than it is to win it. And, you know, you get 2 weeks to game plan. Belichick probably, as he usually does, winds up overcoaching or, you know, overcomparing. And then Wes Welker drops a crazy pass, which he probably – has made a million times in his lifetime, even as an undrafted free agent. And now, here it is, Eli again standing up on the podium. So, you know, it was, to me, it was one of the better Super Bowls, but it wasn't quite one of the ones that I got to watch again. The Mario Manningham catch was, I'm not even going to say flukish, because it wasn't like David Tyree. But it was almost like, you know, this guy really practiced that, you know, like Chris Carter used to. It just was, it came together so well. So, you know, that's my thoughts on that Super Bowl. So, you know, another championship team, which, you know, we could go back and forth probably an hour about, is the Miami Heat. And, you know, I picked the Miami Heat to win the title last year, early in the year, but in the finals, I picked the Thunder to pop them. And, you know, I winded up warm on that account. But, you know, the reason that I'm bringing that up is because I thought that the Thunder was hot at that time. But, you know, things came together for the Miami Heat. Chris Bosh winded up getting healthy. And although Dwayne Wade didn't have the greatest postseason because of his injuries, they managed to put together a good playoffs and a pretty good, damn good finals against a hot Oklahoma City Thunder team. Talk to me about the what you thought about LeBron getting his first ring in the NBA Finals in 2012.
I'm a LeBron fan. You know, I watched the guy in high school. I watched him tear it up in high school. I watched him, you know, go to Cleveland and do his thing. And I was happy to see him get a ring. I obviously had him. I picked him to win against OKC. I had picked him again the year before when they were going against Dallas, but they fell short. I think that just that playoff run, I remember watching, you know, them tear it up going through each round. And, you know, the Indiana series, when they were down in that series, just him bringing the team back and being able to win that series, I was just focusing in on winning and doing what he had to do, because obviously we obviously seen, you know, Wade struggle with his injuries and Bosh was in and out with his injuries, and it just all being on him and him just having just to role players around him. So in a sense, it was kind of like his days in Cleveland and kind of prepared him for those moments. And him going in against a veteran Boston team, you know, just as hungry, you know, and him able to make it out of there and just, you know, put his boots on and battle. You know, I look at what they had to go through in the Eastern Conference and the teams they had to play, and like we were talking about with football, you know, if you get to the finals, all you people have to do is just get there. You know, the toughest road to get there is obviously going through each round to get there. And they had a tough road. I'm not saying that OKC didn't have a tough road, because they had their hands full with the Spurs. A lot of people, when they were down 0-2, was calling for the Spurs to sweep them. And I was one of them. I was like, the way that they were able to move the ball around and get in the paint and shoot three, the way that they were able to against the OKC, I had OKC losing that series. But they were able to, you know, let the Heat show and run those guys out the gym. And, you know, I didn't have OKC winning it because I felt that eventually the youth would catch up with them not being able to be on that big stage. It's the first time they're there. And, you know, everything's just catching up with them. You know, they looked after game two when Miami won in Oklahoma City. I said, those guys don't look the same. OKC don't look the same. They don't look like they were the same hunger and passion that they had against the Spurs. And sure thing, they got to Miami, and they had that sweep, you know, the old five-game sweep. And it was remarkable work by LeBron, able to put the team on his shoulders and do it. You know, I think that we saw, you know, Wade obviously fall from grace from where he was as a star in the league to injuries are starting to ruin his career. Even this year, he's still been battling on and off the court with injuries. I don't know how that's going to play out when the playoff time comes up in very 4 months. But you know, you see, you know, the injuries starting to catch up with him. It's like it's going to be just LeBron and Bosh, you know, going out this year. But you know, LeBron stepped up into the role. And I think he kind of separated himself and changed his thinking that things were just going to be given to him. You got to earn it. He definitely earned his championship ring.
Yeah, and I got to agree, man, because, you know, there was some different type of something that we saw different in LeBron. You know, and it was like, I would just call it maturity, because, you know, I talk bad about a lot of things that LeBron has did on this show, and I mean, it's almost like he grew into a man within a couple of years. You know, he went through a lot of adversity, and, you know, they had to lose the championship to the Dallas Mavericks. And, you know, of course, the decision that he had to go to Miami, there was a lot going on. And, you know, a lot of commercials that he was shooting and all that other stuff. I think it really just slowly but surely came together throughout that whole season. And, you know, even with Wade being hurt, I thought that Chris Bosh would going down would hurt them a whole lot more. But, you know, they winded up sustaining a good record against Boston in the playoffs. And when Bosh came back, they were able to close that series out. I thought it was important that he came back in order to give them a shot, because they don't really have a real big, you know, in that rotation. So with him and Haslam against Ibaka, and, you know, I guess Collison didn't play a whole lot of minutes, but, you know, just, you know, and Perkins, you know, I thought that they needed that. But like you say, it really didn't matter, because it was more about LeBron James and what, you know, him imposing his will as far as trying to win that title. Because, you know, Wade was pretty much playing on one leg. He was more or less, you know, out there just to be, I guess, in the way. You know, he was out there more or less for defensive purposes, just to be, because you could tell that he wasn't 100%. And I hope that we've already seen the best of him. But, you know, Chris Bosh, to me, and people like to discount it and talk bad about him, but I think his impact on the closing part of those two series was very impactful, and he needed to help LeBron. But LeBron has just been on a different type of mission for the past 2 years, and I'm happy for him. You know, I'm not gonna say I'm a LeBron guy. I don't hate him, but you know, him being in Cleveland was enough for me to dislike him. But at the same time, you know, I don't hate LeBron at all, and I'm glad that he was able to get the monkey off his back and be able to get that title.
All right. Yeah, that was definitely key. Bosh was definitely key in the whole series when he was able to come back from his injury and contribute and be in the paint and give Kevin Garnett fits and give Serge Ibaka fits and being able to be out there and spread the floor as well. So, yeah, it was nice to see the Heat close it out and kind of got the monkey off their back. And so I think Eric Spoelstra probably would have been out of there if they would have lost that series. He probably would have been. So it definitely saved his job and got the critics off of him at least for a year. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this playoff run shapes up with the kind of the changing in the guard with Derrick Rose being down and Chicago's not being a factor. You know, you never know how he's going to come back from that injury that he sustained. And, you know, it's going to be with Boston being iffy and older, a lot older, and them not having that offensive threat that they had with Ray Allen and him being down in Miami. So it's the East is shaping up to be something, and it's definitely going to be a lot of new faces, a lot of new teams out there to compete. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a pretty good year this year, playoff wise, for East and West.
Yeah, well, I think it's shaping up to be a good season, NBA wise. So I'm not saying that it's going to be great, but down the stretch, it's looking like it's going to be pretty thick as far as the, you know, that middle of the pack, the battle, you know, anywhere between, say, 4 and 8 and even the rest of those teams trying to get into the playoffs. I think that's going to be fun to watch on both sides, whether it be East or West. So I'm happy with the way that the NBA is shaping out this year. But also, too, I can't forget about the Olympics. Because them guys went over there and took care of business, basketball-wise. And, you know, to me, that just added to LeBron's year. You know, if that guy looks back at 2012, he's probably going to say that, you know, he's probably going to have more awards just from that year than he probably would in any time of his career. And, I mean, you could probably put that in the same category as Michael Jordan, because when they formulated the Dream Team, you know, that's when Michael was taken off. the MVPs and the finals that he was winning. So, and then, you know, I'm not comparing LeBron to Mike at all. Don't get me wrong, but you know, just that type of season. 2012 was great for LeBron. They went over there and took care of business, and I mean, you know, they took Durant, Westbrook, Kobe, Carmelo. I mean, they just I don't know if we could. We had the argument. I don't know if you were on the show, but the Dream Team versus this team, that was some good talk because of the matchup that we talked about. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just looking back at some of the things that we talked about, especially during the Olympics, because, you know, that was a pretty damn good team. And basketball is better worldwide now than it was back then. So talk about that real quick.
As far as the Dream Team debate, man, I mean, I will always have to give it up to Jordan's squad, you know, the 92, because if you look at a lot of those guys were in the prime, you know, of their careers. You know, you look at Larry Bird, Magic, Michael Jordan, Karl Malone. You know, if you look at those guys, they were in the prime of their careers. And I think that even if you were to even take some of the worldwide talent and put them in, it probably wouldn't have been as big of a blowout of the, you know, the 30 or 40 point blowouts that there was, but that probably would have still been some blowouts that would have occurred. You know, this year's Olympic team, they struggled some games. You know, they won some games by 5 or 6 points or 2 or 3 points, and you know, they ran up against competition, but I just couldn't see that roster, that 92 Dream Team, struggling like they did, you know, just because they had Jordan. You know, Kobe is at the end of his career. You know, maybe if Kobe was 5 or 6 years younger, you know, maybe would have had been more blowouts. I think this team kind of caught some guys, you know, in flux in as far as in the later stages of their careers. I mean, LeBron was obviously the leader. They have some talent. You got Westbrook, they had, you know, Kevin Durant. But those guys aren't known for their defense. You know, you look at 92 team, Jordan defense. Karl Malone was a pretty good defender. You know, Larry Bird was okay, but he was mainly outside jump shot shooter. He was a threat. You know, John Stockton. You know, I mean, they had guys that they can put out there defensively that can lock you up. And, you know, you didn't have to worry about, you know, on this year's team, a lot of defensive liabilities. Kevin Durant is not the best defender in the league. He struggles at times. So you can kind of go tit for tat, but I think the 92 Dream Team was the best one. But overall, LeBron, you know, like you say, he won a lot of awards, MVP, you know, finals MVP, gold medal. He put together a remarkable season, and was definitely one for the ages. But you know, he worked for it all. Nothing was given to him. He definitely carried that team and was able to get it. He's still playing good ball now, this early on in the season.
I don't want to compare. I don't want to go back down that road, because I would just take the Dream Team. But I think, you know, if you could find some way to formulate it to where you could simulate that game, whether it be on a video game, I would watch, because I think it's very entertaining. That would be that, just the talk of that. I mean, you know, regardless of what side you would pick, or if you would just not want to argue alone, I think it just goes back to say that, you know, you got a lot of players in their prime right now that could take full advantage of some of those guys. Like you said, Larry Bird and Magic, they weren't in their prime anymore. So you could go back and forth, and you could talk about each player's career versus each team, or you could just talk about when the team was assembled at that period of time. So that's why I think the talk was so healthy, because, you know, it was so many different ways that you could put it, because it's unrealistic anyway. So, you know, that's why I didn't have a problem talking about it, because I thought it was a pretty good topic. But, you know, and you know, And since we're talking about the Olympics, I don't know if you watched the Olympics, Rico, but, you know, some of the performers that we saw this year were pretty damn good. And I'm talking about Ryan Lochte, Usain Bolt, and, of course, the best Olympian of all time, Michael Phelps. You got any thoughts on any of those three guys?
I watched a lot of track and field. I did catch Usain Bolt. He was amazing. I mean, I think that, you know, we obviously watched him a few years ago, you know, when he first burst out into the scene. And he, you know, he's a remarkable, the way he runs is remarkable. He's not beating people by a little bit either. He's beating them by a lot, you know, by two or three person lengths sometimes, even more than that. So he had a remarkable run. Phelps, I caught some of Phelps in the Olympic. I think the times that I did were able to catch him. He said he won the bronze, won our silver. He came up short. He didn't win the gold. But he just his overall career was amazing. To win the most medals that has ever been won by an Olympian was amazing. And you know, him able to put all that together and stay focused and come back, you know, and put on a show for the world, you know, and represent his country, and was amazing. So, you know, those two guys, I definitely, you know, a lot did catch some basketball, but, you know, it's just amazing how, like you said, the Usain Bolt situation, you know, the guy's just fast, and it's just unbelievably, you know, he's just unbelievably fast.
Yeah, I thought the Usain Bolt thing was just like you said, man. The fact that he's beating guys with some in record pace, with some time to give. You know, he's letting up before he even crossed the finish line. And I'm talking about the 100 and the 200. And it's just, you know, to me, I'm like, dude, why don't you just go ahead and shatter the record so nobody will ever be able to break it? You know.
Right.
And that's the type of greatness that I want to see. But at the same time, it's like, well, he still put it out of reach. And, you know, we always find guys that come along that will break records. And it's just, you know, you look at it and you say, dang, how do people keep getting faster? So, you know, for Bolt to be able to do what he did, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you, because I've watched track and field for quite some time. It's a lot of guys that were in the field against Bolt who are extremely fast also. And I'm talking about even the American and the other Jamaican cat. I mean, I'm remiss because I don't have any names, but, you know, if Bolt doesn't even break the record, I think that you might have an argument for another couple other cats that were actually fast out there. So that just further proves how fast Bolt actually is for, you know, this Olympics to be as great as it was. Like you said, with Michael Phelps, man, you know, he could have retired 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And he comes back, yeah, he lost one medal to Ryan Lochte, who had a great Olympic. But, you know, he closed out his career in class fashion, you know, regardless about the weed smoke and everything, because I think everybody smoke weed every now and then, or once in a while in their life. But, you know, to me, it's no big deal. He bounced back from that situation, and I think that he probably didn't train the way he needed to win all of his medals. But, you know, he had his great run. You know, and his, you know, winning the medals that he's won, it's like, it's never going to happen again to win all of those medals at one Olympics or two Olympics. You know, some people train all their life and don't even win one medal. And we're talking about the greatest Olympian. So, I don't know. I think we're just fortunate as Americans, or even as people around, you know, Michigan, to have a guy like that train in our backyard. And, you know, I think he really, regardless of how people feel about the sport of swimming, I think he put it back on the map, you know, because, you know, we all are typical sports fans, but we watch the more conventional sports, hockey, basketball, baseball, and football. But, you know, I think he did a little something for the sport of swimming, and I think that's good, you know, to give kids an opportunity to want to do something else outside of what the lure means, just in case, you know, they may not be good in other things. So that's just my thoughts on that. You got anything else you want to bring up? because, you know, we covered a lot. I mean, we could. I don't too much on the LA Kings because I was just pretty upset about the fact that the Red Wings couldn't go deep in the playoffs. But the fact that that lockout is going on for 2 years is deep right there. So hockey fans are not going to be happy.
No, they're not. They're going to be. I mean, it's amazing that it seems like hockey can never really get it together. They've been through this lockout situation before, and it's unbelievable that they could just put their fans through it again. You know, it's just, you know, they barely survived the last lockout that they went through, and to do it again when the sport was kind of just started coming around. It just started getting a lot of major TV deals, and people were starting to become very relevant again. And to do it again, it's unbelievable. And, you know, it's just a lot of rich people arguing about money.
Right. I don't know if you check out the website a lot, whole lot, Rico, but it's kind of random. I'm going to bring this up, but who in your eyes is probably, I guess you saw in 2012, the baddest woman out there?
The baddest woman that's out. I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm trying to think of who am I saying, like, man, she, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I can't say I don't watch a lot of TV because I do, but I don't know. I can't say that I'm coming off the top of the dome. I've seen a lot of bad women this year. Just in magazines, reading different magazines. You know, a lot of times you don't really look at the names, you're looking at the face. So,
right, yeah.
You know, I don't know. I can't think of anything off the dome. She was hot. I can't think of anything off the top of the dome. I probably have to go on the website and check it out.
Well, I'm just throwing some extra stuff out there because I think that one of my favorite movies this past year was Ted, and I think Mila Kunis was one of the hottest chicks of this year because I liked her in that movie, and also the one with Justin Timberlake. I think it was called Friends with Benefits or something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she was. She was definitely hot. Definitely.
I thought she was hot in that movie. I mean, I could throw Delicious in there. I could throw, of course, because Delicious always doing her thing. I could throw Kate Upton in there. You know, I could go all day. But, you know, that's just a few, just because you couldn't give me one. So I throw those three out there. You know, I'm gonna be putting some tweets out about some of the hottest cheerleaders in the year of sports and some other stuff. But hopefully, I can get some more stuff on DetroitManzoom.com. Like I said, man, you got anything else you want to add to the year? Any good movies you saw this year?
I don't know. I've seen Expendables 2 was a good one. Ted was hilarious. Man, what else? I was just watching a whole bunch of movies earlier. I've seen Django. Django was good. I mean, I think you have to be a Quentin Tarantino fan to understand his movies. A lot of people who are not Quentin Tarantino fans probably shouldn't go see the movie.
I need to go see that.
Right, it was a pretty good movie. What else? I want to say that I've seen a lot of movies. Sorry to Looper. I like Looper. Of course, the Batman, The Dark Knight Rises.
I haven't seen that yet. I gotta check that out. I haven't seen that yet, so I gotta go. I'm sleeping on that one.
Yeah, it's long. It's long, but I guess it doesn't feel long because the story explains, you know, the length of it, which explains why it's so long. But Batman, you know, Dark Knight Rises, Expendables 2. I like Trouble with the Curve. And his great thing is the guy that the woman who played Clint Eastwood's daughter in the movie, she was hot. She was another one in that movie. I think that was it. I think Sparkle, but that was, you know, it was weird.
Yeah, I thought the Avengers was good. I thought they did that pretty well. You know what, one movie I did recently catch that came out this year that I liked was 21 Jump Street. I thought they did that kind of sweet.
Okay.
It wasn't great, but I liked the way that they did it. They left it open for a part two. But I thought it was cool too. I gotta catch The Dark Knight Rises. Matter of fact, I might watch it tonight.
Right.
If I get a hold of it. But and I gotta watch Project X because I heard that was crazy. So
yeah, that was definitely crazy. I enjoyed that too. Project X was also good.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll bring up a couple of other. I thought The Gray was a good movie because I'm looking at a list here. The Gray was a good movie. I like Red Tails a lot. I think I need to get that on Blu-ray.
I got that on Blu-ray. I actually, the first time I watched it was on Blu-ray, and it was good. I liked the story. I liked the even though you can kind of tell where it's going, it was still a good movie overall.
That's something that we like to throw in here. You know, some pretty good movies. But I thought this year was a pretty good year. I know they're supposed to be working on the Iron Man 3 real soon. I don't know if you into the comic.
I liked the Avengers. I can't say that I did like it. I liked Lawless too. Lawless was another good movie that came out. I liked that. Men in Black 3, they probably could have kept that. I didn't really care for it.
I wasn't really a fan of either the first one. The first one was okay, but I wasn't a big fan of the second one at all.
Yeah, I see Safe House was good too. I liked Safe House. Prometheus was okay. I actually liked Snow White and the Huntsman. I actually liked that more than I thought I would have. What else? I've seen Silent Hill, the Revelation in 3D. That was okay. Man on the Ledge was actually good. I didn't think that was going to be a pretty good movie, but it would. It shocked me. Battleship was good.
Yeah, I got to check that out. I got to check out Battleship because I heard some things about that, but I got to see for myself. So I'm putting a list together of stuff I need to close out the year with. But have you heard about the Lone Ranger coming out with Johnny Depp?
No, I haven't heard about it. I got to check that out. I like the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, they got that and G.I. Joe. Both of those are supposed to be going to come out next year.
I grew up as a kid that loved the cartoon.
But this one is gonna be different. The previous one was whack. It would have been a decent movie if it wasn't G.I. Joe, but I think it was stupid. But this one looked like it's gonna be legit. And then they got the Superman coming out too. So those are just a few movies that's getting ready to come out that were probably worked on throughout this past year. So I'm just throwing those out there. But yeah, that's good talk, man. We could close the show out because I'm sure anybody who's listening or listening this far is probably gonna get bored. We probably have to continue on next year.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know what to close the show with. Go ahead and give out your Twitter name. I want everybody to know who you are, Rico.
Everybody can follow me at TeamRilla_Rico. Just to cap out the year, you know, I hope everyone have a party well and make it home safe and have a great 2013. So happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, Yeah, Happy New Year to you, Rico, man. I appreciate you checking in on all the shows that you be doing with Detroit Mavs Room, man. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Let's see. Everybody, make sure, if you're still listening, chime in, like the Facebook fan page, the Detroit Mavs Room. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. We got more stuff coming. Again, I got Miss Dane coming in. She's going to be on the show on Wednesday. We're doing a special show at 5 o'clock. So, you know, of course, you can get all the latest and greatest in sports from our social networks. And make sure you check out DetroitMazoo.com. It's your boy, Smitty. Check me out on Twitter, SmittyDMR. Easy to holler at. You know, we can talk sports, fatherhood, movies, all type of other stuff. So, you know, again, we appreciate all the listeners that we've had, everybody who's checked out the website. And, you know, don't hesitate to holler at us. We always here. And, you know, again, to me, this is the greatest sports city in the world. Support your people. Support all of the things that go on in the Motor City. We appreciate it. We appreciate you supporting us. We out of here for 2012. Take care.
Welcome to H. Rodney. Tonight, yeah. Great guest, the incredible,